It's Ash Sade. You're listening to I Got Questions. This week, I interview my good friend Nathan about growing up in India, immigrating to Canada, selling toilets, and more. Oh, and I learned an important lesson not to record outside on a hot day. Sorry about all the cricket noises. Enjoy. Hey, Nathan.
Hey.
You're my friend, right?
I guess we are. We'll see by the end of this interview.
There's a lot to talk about. And then today you said you'd want to be on the show, but not longer than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But when you tell a story, it takes longer than 20 minutes.
Fair enough. So I meant just edit this entire episode to be not longer than 20 minutes.
There's so much to talk about with you, though. There's so much to your life. Let's start in India. Do you think you being Indian is like a novelty with people you know?
You know what? It's kind of funny. I don't think it is. I mean, I was actually, strangely enough, I just had this conversation with this girl I went to school with, like, not even a week ago. And I said, you know, thankfully, I actually came here because I don't know what my life would have been if I was in India. I never felt like I was actually connected to India in some way. Like, you know, when I was there, I didn't feel like I was part of it.
Well, we'll get there, but you get a lot of questions about India, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, you know, the novelty of being Indian doesn't really resonate with me as much. It's like, okay, yes, I guess I'm like the brown friend, but I don't think
you're saying that to the other brown guy, and then all our friends are brown. Yeah.
No, but I mean, like,
I know what you mean.
A darker shade of brown, you know, like the token black guy, but like the token brown guy,
really brown
in a circle of predominantly Caucasian people.
Well, how long were you in India?
I spent nearly 18 years of my life
there. And you have like no feeling or...
No, and I seemingly have this, you know, love-hate relationship with India for some pretty obvious reasons. I love the food. I love the people there that are my family and friends. And then I hate everything else.
when you were there and there's like cricket and whatever other sport. Yeah. Is soccer popular there?
It's very popular now. It wasn't as popular when I was growing up. I mean, it was popular within the community that I lived in.
And did you play cricket?
I did, because luckily for me, the community I lived in was predominantly Catholic. And the culture...
Did you say luckily?
Yeah.
Why?
Because to me, I got to experience two different worlds. Being in that city. So my community, which was an area, the suburb, which was, you know, preserved for Catholics.
Yeah, because you told me before, like, the government put this aside for Catholics.
Yeah, see, Catholics are a minority in India, right? So if they're less than 1% of the population and they want to preserve that culture or, you know, that history, what they did was they designated certain areas of the city to say that this area could, the land could only be owned by a Catholic.
And
that didn't mean that, you know, somebody of a different faith couldn't live there. They could, but they just couldn't own it.
So it's kind of like reservations.
Yeah.
But is the land like nice, or is it like the crap you hear?
No. It's nice. I mean, it's actually one of the most coveted sort of suburbs in India, I would say, and obviously in the city now. I mean, it's got a big melting pot of different religions and stuff living there.
In that neighborhood.
It's really changed. But what I was getting at was, when I went to school, with non-Catholics.
Okay.
It was a private school. You know, affordability was definitely one of those factors where a lot of the private school kids came from wealthier, you know, Hindu Muslim families, and you didn't see that many wealthy Catholic families back then.
But when you went to school, it wasn't just Catholic kids; it was still a mix.
There were hardly any Catholic kids, is what I'm saying. In the school I went to,
right?
There was predominantly more wealthy Hindu and Muslim kids.
And did you speak Hindi at all?
Yes, and maybe like 10 Catholic kids, but I spoke Hindi as much as I speak French. And that was that cultural divide that, you know, my Hindu friends or my Muslim friends would be, you know, they'd notice that and they'd say, hey, man, just stick to speaking English. So I had that, you know, and I had that experience with that outside of a, you know, call it a different community almost. But now when I'd go to play in the evenings, like after school, I'd play with my friends from my community, which was really neat because we'd play soccer, you know, and that was very much something that was popular with the Catholic community. But then when I'd be with my school friends, we'd play cricket because that was something very popular with the Hindu community. So
your life was already set up to be kind of separate from traditional India.
Yeah,
like
very
neighborhood,
much so. Very
religion,
much.
Language.
100%.
It kind of makes sense now.
Yeah, and that explains, you know, the huge disconnect I had with Mother India, really. Even, you know, food-wise was different. You'd go to a restaurant and, you know, you'd eat butter chicken, but you'd never actually have butter chicken in my house.
Right.
Or my aunt's house or my grandmother's house. It was a very different cuisine. And that's cool. And that's what I love about India was this variety. And I truly actually love the history and the architecture of India. And, you know, that's some really cool stories that they had. But other than that, man.
What do your parents think about India? Like, did you absorb anything from them? What's their outlook on India?
I think my parents, you know, they're sort of the mindset that India sort of, you know, it's obviously corrupt and everybody knows that, but they just wanted me to have sort of the best opportunity possible. So if that meant leaving the country to go elsewhere, that was better than being in India. For my parents, though, I mean, they've made their life there. They like the sense of community that they have there. However, I don't think that they would necessarily say that, you know, it's the best.
So was their plan always for you to leave India?
I think so. In some shape or form. Or to leave their house sooner than later.
Oh, that's every parent, hopefully.
Yeah.
Not 40 living at home. What did your parents do growing up?
They worked really hard. You know, my mom actually has been a career hairstylist for, oh my gosh, like I want to say...
Longer than you've been alive?
Longer than I've been alive, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think she didn't finish high school because she sort of found this as a passion and then just worked at it. So she's been working at it since she was a teenager, I guess. And my dad, on the other hand, he worked in the hotel hospitality catering industry. And he worked for a few different hotels. He worked for a very large Indian newspaper where he ran sort of like a catering division for the newspaper and all its employees, like on a day-to-day basis.
And that's a big thing in India, to feed employees, right?
If you're a big company, yes, but it wasn't sort of one of the perks. I think the employees still had to pay into the plan.
Okay. But even private businesses, like I remember watching an episode of Amazing Race where one of the challenges was they had to deliver food, and it was a crazy amount of food at lunch to all the workers.
I think, there's something really cool called the Dabbawala system. In India, when I actually took my my in-laws down to India, we sort of went down to the train station just to sort of show them this whole concept. And I could be very wrong on this, but I think an Ivy League school tried to study this business model, because supposedly this business model is so basic in terms of you know, how it operates. Like, you know, there's no insane technology behind it to make sure that, you know, things are being done efficiently or correctly. It's supposedly just color coded. There's a few symbols, and there's millions of food leaving people's houses being picked up by these guys just so that their significant others get to eat a hot meal at lunch.
That is amazing. So, like, the wives or, like, moms make food?
The wives or the mothers, they make the food. They put it in these tiered containers, and it's all warm.
And then
it's picked up. So, you're not microwaving this food when you get it, but it's picked up by these delivery guys. You know, talk about Uber Eats, but, you know.
Yeah. They like load up their mopeds or whatever.
Well, no. There's no mopeds. It's sort of, it's all carried on their head on like these like...
They walk it?
Yeah, they walk it and they walk it to the train station. And then the train, they load it all into the train station. And then depending on the code, you know, it goes from there elsewhere. I actually think that the Indian men or whoever's receiving these dabbas don't actually know if they're actually getting the food that they're...
It's just good food.
I think it's just good food and they don't complain about it because...
India has stuff that only could exist there, like because of the labor, and there's something about working hard that's just ingrained, it seems.
Yes. Indians are extremely hardworking individuals. That's amazing. I don't think anybody can take that away from them. You know, very rarely have you met a lazy Indian person. And the only reason you'd see them lying on their back is probably because they've been working, you know.
I know one, because today I wanted to record at a specific spot in your house, 15 feet away from where you were sitting. And you said, let's just record here because I don't want to go sit over there.
But I told you, man. Yeah. I have that's my divide there. I wouldn't consider myself a lazy person.
No,
I'd say I'm a...
Well, hold on. We'll talk about how hard you work.
Okay.
I just want two more things about you.
Okay.
When you were in India.
Okay.
What kind of student were you?
A horrible student.
Horrible, like compared to Indian kids, or horrible in general?
Oh my God. That's, you know what? Compared to Indian students are, again, they're really... They strive for great results. To them, that's what matters. And, you know, it should matter as a student. To me, I didn't care about that shit. For me, it was, I went to school to hang out with my friends. Sure, I learned a few things along the way.
Just osmosis.
I wrote my, I studied a little bit when it came to exams. I passed my exams. Sometimes I did really well, and I wonder sometimes if the teachers even bothered to really look at, you know, some of our grades. But by and large, I thought I was not going to, you know, graduate from, you know, what would be the equivalent of high school.
Really?
Yeah, because Indian high school. I was sort of coerced by my parents to take up a science sort of, you know, major in high school. And that's really, you know me, that's not really my cup of tea. I should have really been in a more arts
That's just like focus. My brother. Like, yeah. I remember fights with my parents because they were like, oh, you have to take chemistry and physics and it's just a foundation. But then here, it's like, well, I'm not going to even use that stuff.
Yeah. And that was the exact same thing. It was the foundation. So I think I was coerced into this, you know, get into science. It's going to open up all these doors for you. And I said, hey, you know what? My parents know more than I do at this point. So obviously, I listened to them. And it's not like you have much choice in India where you say, no, mom, because that never happens.
No, and it's they want the best for you, right?
They do. I mean, everything they do, it obviously comes from love. But yeah, that being said, I'm pretty sure I didn't deserve to pass high school. Somehow I did. With not so bad, you know, like my grades were like better than like a failing grade or nearly failing grade.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it was more than a satisfactory sort of grade.
Were grades ever a thing that you and your parents fought over? Or they were just like, this is Nathan?
I don't think that... Fighting would be the wrong word. More like, you know, where grades a sore point in school where my parents would whoop my ass if I didn't sort of produce a good grade. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. It wasn't really my parents. It was more my mom. She was sort of the ruler of the
That's still household. Accurate, right?
It is. Yeah, it is still very much accurate. I remember my mom coming up here to Canada when I first came to school here, and she wanted to take a look at my transcript. And I was so nervous because, you know, oh my God, like I hated it. I had algebra and all this other good stuff at school, and I was terrible at it. And I didn't know how to present that grade to her without sort of, you know, wondering if I was going to get a backhand, you know, the moment she saw the grade.
Right.
Yeah. But
what's the thing in India you got in the most trouble for?
Lying.
About what?
Wait, oh my god, wait to air my dirt out.
Yeah. When we were walking here earlier, I asked you, is anything off limits? And you said, no, I think I'm getting close.
Whoa, I thought we were friends. So,
what did you lie about?
Oh my god, I lied about so many things.
Just
I think
one that stands out.
So if I got into trouble at school, I'd try to sort of weasel my way out of it, weasel my way out of telling my parents, so I'd sort of hide the truth, and somehow make up, you know, white lies about it. Breaking my neighbor's window while playing cricket or tennis one day, though, that I blame on the government because they didn't really provide parks. Yeah, they don't provide parks, or, you know, everything's like a concrete jungle, so you're forced to play on the street.
Right.
And I mean, you know, shit happens. I lied about, that was actually the worst. Cheating on a test at school. That was pretty bad.
You have a history of this. I can't wait till we talk about how we met.
I think it was it must have been within like a 3 or 4 year span.
I also can't wait for her to come here in a few weeks.
I think that was a phase in my life.
So, you moved to Canada. Mm-hmm. Were you scared?
No, I didn't actually think that was going to be that bad at all. I was actually excited to just be moving away. I did have a girlfriend at the time. I guess that was like the only thing that I was sort of concerned about when moving away. But other than that, no, I was excited. It was a new chapter in my life. I really didn't actually know what I was coming into.
What were your first impressions of Canada? Or like the first week here?
Oh, it was cold.
What time of the year was it?
I had moved here in January.
Ooh.
It was cold. I thought the Pontiac Sunfire was the coolest looking car ever. And every time I was on the highway, you know, I just wanted, like, one would drive by me and I was like, oh my god, that is a cool looking car. So
there
was
that. And what do you do for a living now?
Right now, I would say that I'm an interior designer by trade.
So you have an eye for good looking things.
I do.
Do you think
my wife would appreciate that comment?
Do you think when they find out you like the Pontiac Sunfire, you're going to lose a few referrals?
No, I think they would sort of appreciate that. You know, even though I was young, I still had a keen eye for things. I mean, obviously, you know, now that I was exposed to, you know, all the other different cars that were available. I should say though, in India, they didn't have India sort of had a car manufacturing sort of ability to only produce Indian made cars, and they taxed imported cars, you know, at a very high rate. So the idea was to sort of, you know, support the Indian automobile manufacturer. So from
now
that perspective,
I get it now.
You know, I was in India looking at rickshaws and Fiats and
Tatas.
Yeah, Tatas. Yeah. I saw some Tatas last night.
So, speaking of Tatas, moving on from Tatas. Okay, yeah. So you see Sunfire.
Like
Sunfire. What else?
So that was pretty cool. And then, and then I had to get a job, which was different because I never had a job.
Why did you have to? Just for
I think it was just
things?
it was sort of the responsible thing to do, I guess. My dad had moved to Canada a year before I did, to sort of set me up with the whole immigration process. And
did you have a job in India?
No, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, in India, before I got to Canada, I sort of, you know, took up some part-time work at, you know, my uncle's office, where they did some architectural doors and door hardware, etc. But, I mean, I was just doing data entry stuff, really basic stuff. It was, I think my parents were just trying to prep me for the real world.
Right.
And this time around, you know, I came to Canada and my dad was like, all right, well, people at your age, they work here. You need to get some work experience before you can actually get a job that matters. And so I was just going with the system or what it sort of needed.
Speaking of your dad, you didn't say what he did or does.
My dad is amazing. I mean, that man is, if I had to put him in, you know, I'd say he's selfless. He's done so much for our family. And I think, you know, as much as successful as my mom is, I think my dad had a great dealing in getting us, I'd say my mom and me, to sort of the points that we are in our life. So,
but professionally? Oh, you said hospitality.
Yeah, he was in the hospitality. But, you know, he's sort of always been sort of like the Canadian Senate, like, you know, second sober thought. And I think I have a fiery side and a very, you know, outgoing side like my mother, but there are times where, you know, my dad's sort of, what's the word here?
He's like the calming one or the rational?
Yeah, the rational one. Right. Yeah, that's my dad. So
who do you think you take after more in just your
I think it depends on temperament. The situation. It, you know, I find I'm like my dad a lot. You know, especially when I'm trying to reason with somebody, but most of the time I find I'm like my mom, where, you know, she's sort of like this outgoing social butterfly, always got to have people around her.
That's really accurate.
Yeah.
Because people get upset that you always play devil's advocate, but you're always the most fun person to be around.
Yeah. And my thing is I play devil's advocate not to sort of take a side or not take a side. It's more just to sort of try to understand somebody's perspective. I mean, happens to me too if you know, I got into a fight, but I find that I can sort of understand somebody's perspective, and, you know, I get called names sometimes when I do that, so we'll leave it at that.
I have been in those chat groups.
Yeah.
Assimilation seems pretty easy for you when you came here. What was the hardest part?
I think the hardest part was finding, you know, figuring myself out. I went through many phases. At one point in time, I sort of, you know, was into Black culture, and I felt that I could assimilate, you know, in Canada, but, you know, with people of the Black community, because, you know, their cooking, their family, the music that they listen to, that was all very similar to my upbringing. And I think I kind of took it a little too far, though.
But I never thought about it that way. But it's true. A lot of immigrants turn to, like, hip-hop and start dressed. Like, back then, when baggy was a thing, you dressed baggy.
Yeah.
But a lot of immigrants do this because it's like carefree and fun.
It is. It is. And I think in some case, it seemed easier to integrate into, you know, society that way. Again, I think, though, as a younger kid, that's sort of what the young kids did because it was the cool thing at the time. Right. So that could be a biased opinion.
Was it easy for you to make friends when you got here?
Yeah. I mean, that's how we met.
Let's talk about how we met, because I told a story at both of our weddings, I think.
Yeah.
Because we emceed each other's weddings.
And then my mom rang my ears after she heard that. But
because she heard it at the wedding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was funny. I mean, I have no regrets, but this was, again, back in my phase where I was cruising through school on the backs of others. I wasn't a bully, though. Let's just put it that way.
No, you were super nice. Yeah.
I killed people with my kindness, I guess. That's
you
sort
get
of
people to do things for you where it's on paper. I don't know why people do these things, but when they get to know you, you're just so nice. Everyone's like, yeah, sure, I'll give you a kidney. And it's like, oh, but he lost his because he drank a lot, not because he has a problem. So yeah, first year, first midterm, first you asked year. For my notes, and then you cheated off me in the midterm.
Yeah, I think that was just an immigrant thing to do. It was sort of, you know,
I wouldn't paint immigrants with a brush of cheating.
No, not cheating. I meant you kind of
help each other out.
Yeah, you help each other out. You do what you got to do to get by, and you know, school was important in India, but that stuff happened all the time.
What did you get into school for here? What was the program when you started?
Economics. Again, I didn't know anything about what I wanted to do with my life, right? So this started all the way back in high school when I was with that science background, opened my doors to the wonderful world of, you know, business. I would watch these movies and imagine myself in a power suit, you know, working in those tall glass buildings.
You're getting there, though.
Yeah, but I don't think I'd wear a power suit anymore. I mean, I'd definitely roll up my shirt, show my tattoos, and, you know, wear shoes without socks. That seems to be something that a lot of my clients, you know, call me out on.
What do your parents think about your tattoos?
I think when I first got the tattoo, it was sort of, you know, oh, well, at least it's hidden. And then when I knew that was okay, then I just, you know, went with it. And at a certain point, I should say, though, I was still working towards my career and sort of trying to, you know, get me to a level where I felt it was okay now to, you know, express my love for tattoos in a way where it wouldn't necessarily affect my career in a negative way.
They didn't care about your teardrop tattoo?
Good one. Mom, if you're listening, I do not have a teardrop tattoo. I'd probably stay away from tattoos on the neck and the face, as, you know, or the knuckles. Yet. Yeah, I probably would. No. I don't think I love, like, I would love it name? That much.
Your daughter,
probably still not there.
Okay, so you're in economics, you hated it, and then you switched.
Yeah, I think, you know, reality hit me at my second year going into school, where I sort of felt this immense guilt come on, where I was like, oh man, my dad, you know, he sacrificed all his time to get me here, and, you know,
what do you mean by that?
Well, my parents, in order for me to come to school to Canada, you know, I may have gone to a private school in India, but we didn't grow up wealthy. Like I said, my parents were really hardworking. They came from nothing. They didn't come from nothing. They came from obviously great families with a good support system, but they started out with nothing.
Financially.
They started out with nothing. And they sort of built their way up through some smart moves that, you know, kudos to my mom and dad that, you know, we were able to get to a certain point in our lives where things were affordable now and comfortable.
What you tell me, the smart moves, and you already mentioned it, your parents don't seem like they're afraid to go outside of the bubble of, like, this is our neighborhood, this is our city. They will go anywhere to make things happen.
Yeah,
and you have that too.
That's exactly it. It was just this sort of hustler mentality, right? Like, if you're not going to do it, somebody else is willing to do it. So, you know, maybe you should give that a second thought. And that's sort of how I've been brought up. But, you know, to sort of go back to what we were saying, when all of that happened, it was, I think we've lost train of thought. What was the question? No,
I asked you why you changed schools, and you said you felt guilty because of everything your dad did, and I was asking you what he did.
So they worked really hard, and, you know, for me, I got this realization where I needed to really figure life out or figure my shit out, and that's how it happened. I sort of dug deep and realized, hey, I really love architecture and design. And maybe I should look into that as a career. And I just didn't think, not architecture, but more interior design. I didn't think interior design was worth going to school for. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know enough about it. So when I started doing more research into it, I was like, hey, there is a difference between somebody having just good taste and then, you know, the technical aspect behind the degree.
And we've talked about the title interior design. It doesn't seem to convey what it actually is.
No, and I also don't really like telling people that I'm just the interior designer, because I feel like I'm much more than that. I just call myself a designer, you know, because there's that certain element of creativity that that title sort of, you know, gives you. And I feel that I do more than just, I don't know, focus on just a room.
You know? When I see you work, you're much more mechanical than design and taste, like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's part of just how the career or how that sort of job evolved. There's certainly a design element, but, you know, there's a lot of project management, there's client management. So my workday consists of all of that. And you sort of have to be very organized, you know, as mechanical as that sounds. When you are managing clients on a, you know, you've got a roster of like 20 different projects on the go. You know, creativity is awesome. Being fluid is awesome. But sometimes that can keep you organized, you know.
So when you were looking into your interior design, did anyone help you, or was it just you on your own looking and looking at programs?
That was just me. And I, you know, and that's when I really knew that that was my passion or my calling. Because I think I didn't really need somebody's help to tell me, hey, this is, you know, maybe you should consider this. I think at that point in time, the very fact that I'd gone down that avenue, that was like my defining moment to be like, hey, if I don't go to school for this, or if I don't quit what I'm doing now to sort of hop into this, I will be making a very big mistake.
How did your parents take it?
It's funny. Actually, it's really funny that you got to that, because my mom and dad seem to suggest that they've told me to do this my entire life. And to some degree, they did, but I think they were sort of focused more on the architecture perspective, not the interior design perspective. So I'll give them that, because I didn't want to go to school for architecture. It was more the interior aspect. But when I did tell them that I was quitting university to go to a college, I still had to back it up with, hey, it's still a degree. You know, I'm not downgrading my life. So I think my initial conversation with my parents hit them a little hard. I think my parents were obviously concerned. They still lived in India. I remember having to call one of my mother's brothers to talk to him about it. My parents are good people. They obviously wanted the best for me, but it was sort of, you know, hey, we're concerned. We're really concerned, Nathan. Maybe we're not understanding you properly, so somebody else is going to talk to you now. So I think in the
end, did they bring in like all the family, clergy, all this stuff?
There were definitely a lot of prayers. I bet my family's very religious and very God-fearing, so I'm sure, you know, the entire community at some point was, you know, doling out
a
rosary, a novena, yeah, mass.
So how was school when you changed and went to college? How was that experience?
I loved it. I loved it because I wanted to be there. When I was at university, I wanted to be at the gym. I think I was the most buff I ever was in university, my first 2 years of university.
Yes, but I also remember that I was not, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym with Nathan. I went with you once, and then the next, and all we did was arms, because of course, there's no other muscles. The next day, I'm like, oh, I'm not that sore. The day after, my arms had locked closed, and I had to leave work because I couldn't open my arms, and I was putting Bengay on the inside of my leg.
I remember that. I remember us trying to do a bench press, and you had the dumbbells, you know, lifting up in the air, but they were wobbling.
I don't think there was weight on it. I think it was just the bar, and it was like an hour and a half of just arms. Never again.
University was, university was, I guess, and more of an experimental phase in my life where, you know, I'd found newfound freedom. I'd moved away, really far away from my parents. I mean, I did have my aunt and uncle in town that, you know, were sort of looking over me and sort of taking care of me in that sense. But there was still, I still wasn't, you know, reporting back to them every night by going back to their home. So that was sort of different.
Considering how wide the net was for you in that age.
Yeah.
It's amazing how well you turned out, because it could have gone completely the opposite direction.
It could have. I mean, I did stray down.
When we stopped really being friends.
Yeah. Yeah, we your fault.
I don't know if it was my fault.
His fault.
Okay, so you changed schools.
Yeah.
And then you also moved closer to school, obviously.
Yeah.
Your new school.
Yep.
And the school, the university we were both at was downtown, so it was easy to get to.
Yep.
Neither of us were driving.
Yep.
So you moved.
Take the bus.
And then fine print. I had a girlfriend.
Yes.
Who was more interesting than you at that point.
Yeah. There we go, people. That's the truth.
And now I have two kids with her.
Yep.
And you're friends now.
Yep.
But we stopped being friends for a few years.
Yeah. And you know what? There was, I think at that time too, like I said, it was that experimental phase. I had met a few people back then in my life. I mean, I'm not in touch with them as much now. You know, I see them from time to time and, you know, they've all turned out great too. But I think it was just one of those things where, you know, God forbid, you know, I had a weak sort of willpower.
Right.
I think things could have been really bad. But hey, you know what? I don't have any regrets. I mean, it was a fun time in my life. I think experiencing, you know, those different aspects it somehow shaped me, you know, the way I am today. So would I say, everybody should do that to, you know, experience it and that way you'll turn out to be a better person? Probably not.
You try things at least once that I would never try and I never have again. That arm workout, the one all night party till the morning in Montreal in the winter storm. I'm happy life. I did. They're good stories, but never again.
Never again. Yeah. Yeah. So they were good times.
You're done school.
Thank
Are
God.
You still in the first place you found a job after school?
Amazingly so, yes. I worked in Dubai when I was finishing up school. I was doing a co-op there, and when I came back from my last semester, I needed to find a job because I needed to pay my student loans, blah blah blah. So there was a company by the name of Astro Designs in Ottawa, and they were setting up a whole new showroom and they were planning on hiring new people. So somehow I got an in to get an interview, and lo and behold, I'm still there now. But
it's been like over 7 years.
Yeah, it's been close to like 9 years.
Wow, that's rare.
Yeah, but you know what, I think however it happened, you know, that company's been really good to me, and my career's just been great since being there. I've learned so much. I think I learned more there than I did at school. Not that my school program was bad, it's just, you know, the real world.
Did you have to pay your dues there?
I did. I mean, some of my colleagues feel like, again, that I probably didn't pay them for as long as they had to pay them to sort of end up at the same sort of tier. But I mean, there were just, I had certain strengths and certain weaknesses, and I wasn't afraid to say, hey, these are my weaknesses and that's why I shouldn't be in this spot.
I'm gonna try that line
when
I have to do something and say, sorry boss, I'm weak.
Yeah, but you know what, I think the management too could see that I actually cared, and, you know, they wanted me to succeed because me succeeding meant they succeeded. And
well, that's a smart thing. If they know you, like you just explained, you didn't like economics, so you didn't care.
Yeah.
You cared about interior design, so you love doing it. So a smart manager sees that and they're like, okay, what does he like doing? What's he good at?
Yeah.
Just do that.
Yeah. And I'd say, you know, you don't get management like that all the time because, you know, that was kind of cool. And I think ever since that happened, it's been great because I've never really wanted.
So this might embarrass you, but you've won a whole bunch of awards. You've been in magazines, newspaper. the local newspaper?
Sure, yeah.
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 And you're very humble about this, as much as I tease you when I introduce you as award-winning designer Nathan Kyle. Do you feel that you've made it to a certain level?
Not really, because, it's nice. I feel like I'm doing good in the industry. I don't think I'm the best.
How many more awards will it take for you to forget about your friends?
I don't think that would ever. I don't think. Yeah. Probably see, I'm not wired that way. I mean, the awards, the accolades are nice. I do it, so that, you know, the projects are recognized. And really, I just like creating like places that people want to be in.
Is there someone you compare yourself to locally, or like in your circle of like, oh, that person's at the top? Like, not even like I have to do better, but there's a goal. Like, is there someone like that in your profession?
That's a great question. Actually, there was some really disappointing news that happened that I came across about a week ago. There was I'd call him an industry peer now, but when I started my career with Astro, this guy, Friedman Weinhardt, he's a designer in Ottawa. Unfortunately, he passed away last week through a really unfortunate accident. And he was a big motivator for me, in the sense that I thought that he was a very talented designer. And it wasn't just me. I think Ottawa knew that he was a talented designer. This man won a lot of accolades himself. And then, you know, the first couple design competitions that I didn't win anything, and you'd see him winning and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, look at those designs. Like, it made me want to strive to be better.
Did you know him personally at all?
I didn't. And you know what? We've ran into each other at award shows, and it's always been, you know, this, hey, nice to see you, good luck tonight, or, winning an award and walking by one another's table. And it's like, you know, it's that mutual respect. I think I wouldn't know, but I'd like to think that, you know, he developed a respect for me, because I certainly had a respect for him. Unfortunately, we never got to engage in a conversation that.
And was your respect out of seeing the work he's done, or you've heard stories about him?
No. It was definitely out of seeing the work that he's done. That to me was a big force in who I am today, as far as the career that I've chosen. I mean, there are great designers that I've admired that, you know, I follow through, you know, magazines and social media, but this felt a little more personal because I was actually at one point in time competing with this man on the same stage for a few years.
Right.
So that, you know, it's like, it's kind of like in Karate Kid, if Daniel-san had to, like, you know, all of a sudden compete with Mr. Miyagi. Not that this man was like my teacher, but he was definitely somebody it was definitely somebody I looked up to, because I thought that he was at this level, and, you know, here I am, and I'm like slowly trying to get there. And, you know, it felt good at times, you know, seeing that, you know, sometimes I'd win awards over his designs, and his were really good too. So there was always that like tense moment, like, oh my God, this is close. Because what really made me happy was, hey, you know what? I've put together a product that I think is stellar enough that my competition, which is him, this might actually be a good competition. So
without giving anything away, mm-hmm. What is your end game professionally? Do you have an end game, or are you just go with the flow? I have these two things in my head, or two or three things, because you're really much into like real estate and growth.
Yeah.
And you don't have to tip your hand, but do you have like a 5-year plan, 10-year plan?
I kind of do. I'd say my plan's probably longer than 8, 10-year plan. That sounds bad. I mean, so let's put it this way.
Wait, why does that sound bad?
Things at work are going really well. It's just because it doesn't, you know, it sounds like, oh my God, this guy doesn't have a 10-year plan. But it's not that. I mean, things are going really well at work. I do think that if for whatever reason, you know, if through some misfortune, the company I work for ceases to exist, I probably would get into more of a creative development aspect of where I'm developing creatively developing properties that are very unique from what exists in the current real estate market.
Residential or commercial?
Residential. Okay. But truthfully, I've been really gearing towards wanting to own my own boutique hotel.
All right.
And I think, again, it's not because I've worked in it and I understand the industry. I kind of get how the numbers work. But it's more, again, it's a passion project where it's something that I create that other people get to enjoy. And I think it really stems from that. So,
do you think there's any connection to the work your dad did in hospitality world, that this is even a thought in your head, or there's no connection, or it's just coincidence?
No, I think it's more coincidence. I mean, hospitality in India is, you know, it's a pretty big industry in India. So a lot of people are into that. It's like an obvious career choice for a good percentage of the population in India. So I think that's more coincidence that my dad happened to do that. But somehow I always think, you know, my dad, like, he's done so much. I think he in himself, like himself, may always have this dream of, you know, owning and running this hotel. And it doesn't have to be huge, but
right,
it just needs to be cool.
Yeah. You know? So let's jump over to the last thing I want to talk to you about. Yeah. We're almost at 20 minutes. I'm cool. Kidding. We're almost at an hour. Your home life, your family. It.
Yes.
You're married and you have one daughter.
Yes.
Tell me about the biggest surprise of being a father. Like, what is the one thing you didn't expect to happen? It could be good or bad.
Wow. The one thing I didn't expect to happen when we had a child or a daughter, really, is for this immense love that and respect that you develop for your wife. And, you know, yeah, I mean, having my daughter, obviously I love my daughter, but it's like this next level sort of respect that you have for your partner or your wife or your spouse, you know, from every angle. Like, and it's this respect, like, it's like before, you know, yeah, you're married and, you know, but you'd still sort of do these, you know, I'm gonna do this, you know, sure, she'll get mad, but whatever, she'll get over it, kind of thing. Yeah, she stuck with me. I mean, but now it's like, nah, man, I can't do that. Like, you know,
I don't know if you can mention specifics, but when's the last time you felt that way, that there was a decision and the reason you said yes or no was because you thought back to your wife and you're like, she wouldn't like that or she would like that?
I think So before we had a kid, I think one of the things, you know, we had was like, oh, you know, Nate, like, I'd call her, she'd make dinner, and I'm like, babe, you know what, unfortunately, I can't. She didn't tell me she was making dinner specifically tonight, but, you know, she'd go through the trouble of making dinner and whatnot, and I would just, you know, if I was busy at work, I'd just be busy at work and stay there, and even though I worked 5 minutes away from home, you know, she'd sort of get peeved, you know, hey, I made this dinner, you didn't show up.
Yeah, of course.
But now it's like, if I know it's going to happen, like, it's just this, I don't know, maybe I've grown, maybe I'm more mature now, I guess. But I alluded to Saleh being there because I look at how good of a mom she is and I say, you know, moms deserve respect, you know?
Like that. What's been the hardest part?
It hasn't been hard for, I don't think it's been terrible. I mean, but again, I'm the one that goes to work 5 days a week and I get to do the fun stuff
but
on
your
the weekend.
Life, has your life changed at all?
Our life's altered slightly. I think the biggest alteration is it's evening time. Soleil's down. Hey, let's go get bubble tea. Can't do that. Somebody's got to be in the house.
Right.
So that's probably been, you know, a challenge where we're like, oh, shoot. You know, it would be fun to do this right now. But anyways, so we're kind of getting around to that. But I mean, having Soleil hasn't made things hard yet. I'd say the only, you know, the sleeping factor, sure.
The typical things.
Yeah, it's typical. I mean, it hasn't been terrible. Let's put it that way.
And do you think you've had an opportunity, a decent opportunity to be a parent yet? Or are you just kind of like waiting to, or have you felt like a parent since day one?
I didn't feel like a parent since day one. Day one to 2 weeks in, I just felt like something was taking up room on my couch.
It's beautiful. I think I saw that in a Hallmark card. Congrats, there's something on your couch now.
And I say this, you know, with real love, because I loved my daughter. I wanted to just be around her all the time, but I wasn't allowed to because I was sick. I was sick for 2 weeks. So I had to wear like the SARS mask and sit really far away from the family. I felt ostracized, you know, and
this sounds like the hardest part.
But yeah, I got over it. I mean, it was funny, you know, now looking back at it, but it's one of those things where I think when Soleil got to this age of, I think it was like 2 months or a month and a half, that like the interaction that I started having with her, that was cool. You know, that's when I was like, whoa. Now I'm a parent. It isn't just, you know, we've obviously got this responsibility, but I felt like now that she sort of reacts to me, I have this responsibility too. I knew Julianne always had it, right? Because, I mean, she was doing the feeding and, you know,
not sleeping most of the time.
But the cool part, what I love are my days with my daughter, because when Julianne goes to work.
And what does she do?
She's a registered nurse at the Civic.
And like, so, from what I know, there's days where you guys may not see each other, or she doesn't see Soleil?
Well, she doesn't see Soleil. I mean, they're in the same, they're in the house together. It's just that Soleil's gone to bed. So, she works, 48 hours. So, 12 hour shifts. But you know, they start at 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And when that happens, she's up in the morning, gone before Soleil wakes up, and usually she's back in the evening and Soleil's already gone to bed. So
you get a lot of alone time with her.
Yeah, I get a lot of alone time on those, and I love those days, because you know, the days that mom and dad are off, Soleil definitely has a favorite and it's not me. So the days that I have with Soleil,
no,
I'm
choice.
The favorite. Yeah, I'll take it, you know. It's And I'm hoping I'll be the favorite at some point.
Did it worry you or scare you to be alone with her, like before it happened? Or did you feel prepared?
I don't think anybody could be truly prepared. But again, you know, I'm fairly easygoing, so it's sort of like when I came here, or you know, when I had to make new friends, it's just like, well, we'll see, we'll do it, we'll see what happens, right? And when it went surprisingly well the first time, I was like, it's not a big deal.
Last few questions, because we're almost at 20 minutes.
Yeah.
What is going to, if it gets dark, just say, never mind. Yeah. But what keeps you up at night? What's the biggest worry you have right now in your life?
So it's not a worry, but what keeps me up at night is just more of these lofty ambitions or ideas that I have, and I guess how I'm going to achieve them, or what's preventing me from achieving them, is probably what keeps me up. So it's not really a problem. It's just more something where my mind's just
more excited
working. Or? Yeah, it's excited working overtime. You know, there are times where I think back and I'm like, hey, you know, what I'm doing in life right now, is that what I want to be doing forever? And I guess, and that just goes back to, you know, do I get to do my hotel? But how do I do it? And that sort of, that's probably what keeps me up.
Yeah. Will, this is my last question. Will your hotel have a friends and family discount?
Sure.
So I will keep being your friend till then.
Till then, just then so you can stay at my hotel. I will build it right next to your house.
That'd be just perfect. I hate traveling.
Just so that you can pay to stay.
I hate traveling. Did you have fun talking about yourself? Is this a rare thing for you?
It's cool, actually. You know what? I was kind of nervous. I'm like, oh, I don't know how these interviews go, right? Because I don't know what my voice sounds like on the other side of the microphone. To me, I sound, all right, this sounds cool. This sounds fine. But
so it's more your voice, not like what you're gonna say.
Yeah, it's more my voice.
Well, I'm like, it's gonna be like, I'll fix it.
Yeah. Make me sound like a deep, husky voice.
You don't get nervous when you like meet new people and you have to like not public. I don't know if you ever do public speaking, like in a room.
No, I mean I have to present a lot,
but that
to my clients or to. No, I'm fairly comfortable now.
And you've been in sales, so.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, the company I work for, we sell a lot of plumbing product and whatnot. And sometimes, I don't do this often. It's probably actually only ever happened once. But I like saying it because it sounds funny. It sounds more like a jerk anyways. It's like when you meet people that you really don't find that interesting. And they're like, hey, what do you do for a living? And I say, I sell toilets.
And then where does the conversation go?
Nowhere. So that's perfect.
I should have asked the first question.
But that's what I mean. That's like, that's only really happened one time. I was really exhausted. You know.
The thing I enjoyed most about this was now when people ask, what does Nathan do? He sells toilets.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
You get to say bye because I don't know how to end these things. Do you want to plug anything? Do you have like a public Instagram? Snapchat, I don't know what you do.
Not like that.
Look him up in magazines, awards, YouTube.
I have my Instagram account. I mean, it's public. But I don't do it to self-promote. You know, my wife thinks that I should be doing a lot more of that, but that's not me. I don't do that to self-promote that much. So you know, I'm just going to leave it.
Check out his hotel in a few years.
Yeah.
Ask for the friends and family discount.
Yeah, we're working on that. You know what? I'd say if you guys, you know, keep in the back of your head that hotel is coming, maybe it'll happen sooner for me than later.
Is it going to be in Ottawa?
Yeah. And that, you know what? That's something I know we're ending this, but that's something that has been really near and dear to me is sort of shaping or helping shape this city. So I'm not saying I'm gonna do it on my own. I obviously can't. I just want to be part of those individuals that, you know, are fortunate enough to.
Okay, I have a few more questions because I forgot about this. You really do like Ottawa more than most people. Go, oh, it's boring. It's a government, Montreal or Toronto, but you actually like Ottawa a lot.
I love it. I mean, I came from India, so it's bustling. Yeah. And Ottawa has been, you know, it's been 14 years that I've been here, right? So when I first came here, I'm like, yuck. So I don't expect people that come here for the first time to fall in love with it completely. But, you know, you have a very bemused perspective when you come here first because you're just looking for, you know, when I came here, I was just looking for the party scene or the nightclub scene. And now it's, you kind of get to see the city as a whole. And I do a lot of travel with my clients to different parts of the city and outside the city. It's a gorgeous place, man. To me, it is, I think, one of the best places you could be in the world. I'm not saying it's the best place. I think there's still a lot of cool stuff that can happen and should happen, and I'd hope to like to make it happen. But
what kind of feeling, if at all, do you have for the work you do, in the sense of like you build things and design things and people live in them and make memories in them?
Mm-hmm.
Do you even think about it that way, or is it just me putting words in your mouth?
No, it's definitely that. I mean, there's definitely form over function. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, you design with a purpose. It's not just about making things pretty. It's about, you know, figuring out how people are going to live their lives.
But like, I meant more as a sense of fulfillment of the work I do not only impacts them because, hey, now they have a nice kitchen, but right. That's the counter that they're going to teach their kids how to cook. And that's,
yeah, there's a little bit of that story in there, that I always think of when you're putting together a space. And that, I mean, that's what makes it, you know, awesome, because you could work in the design community and in interior design, and you could work on, let's say, a commercial space or, you know, a hospitality or a retail space or healthcare. But there's something really personal about residential that I find challenging, because it's so specific for that person or that family, rather than, hey, we're designing for 10,000 people and we might hit this right with,
right,
you know,
it's more 50%. Formulaic.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So,
okay, this is right. Good. I think we're at 21 minutes, so cool. We're a little over.
I think we should go in and eat some of that panko shrimp. I have
so many more questions.
Oh,
that I will right. Wait for next time.
Okay.
All cool. Right. Thank you, Nathan.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.